Well, the weather's going to be great today, so I hope you're coming to the harvest party. Hope you're bringing friends and family and in-laws and outlaws and everybody. It's going to be good. Thanks, Scotty. Out at the guest table out there, you can get a pamphlet for your family or whatever. It'll help you in voting in this next couple days, or you can go vote early. You can take that pamphlet with you if you'd like into the voting booth. I don't think there's any rules about that. So you can do that. But I have for you today, now we've been talking about the listening ear, and we're going to continue that, but we're not continuing it today. Today, the Lord has given me something that is on the forefront of the battlefield, and you all know it's coming, and I haven't been real quiet anyway, but it's our time to vote coming up. And so this message today the title I put on it was Exercise Your Right. So let's welcome our online crowd. God bless you guys. Thank you so much for coming. And I want to start this out by just saying, I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. It's not my purpose or my motivation to make you upset. However, I can't hide behind a pulpit either. I have to, if I only give you things that, you know, if I was a kid and I was, just a little infant and my mom only gave me the good, whatever, vanilla pudding or whatever, and I never got broccoli, probably not going to help. That doesn't make any sense, but you know what I'm saying. I got to give you everything that the Lord wants me to give you. And so I'm not apologizing for that. I just want you to know my heart. That's all I'm saying is I'm not here to try to make you mad. Those that are watching, there'll be people that said, I've already voted and I'm not voting the way that I think you're saying or whatever. And this is America, okay? You are allowed to do and vote how you feel led. I just want to give you the facts. Is that okay? All right, so that's what I'm going to, this is called just Exercise Your Right. And so the election is coming. But I'm just here to ask you this morning. So this is different than I normally preach. Anyway, the election is on us. Who is the voice in our country? Or that's exactly right. We should be, the righteous should be the voice. This nation was founded on God. And the Bible. It was. We have people say, no, it's not. Yes, it is. Do your history. Yes, it is. Of the 55 men that wrote the Constitution, 52 were active members of their church. This was founded and grounded on the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so the voice of the country should be the church, the believers, the righteous voice. Now, we could listen to a lot of voices. There's a lot out there. You could say, I watch the news. There's a version. The news version. There's the fake news version. There's, people like, don't watch this one, watch this one. Just read your Bible. Get what you need out of that. But I want to give you, if I could, PB's version today. But just know that I'm taking this from the Bible. We have basically two choices, right, when it comes to candidates. We have two choices, and they're completely opposite ends of the spectrum. One's here, one's there, and you all know, if you even have a television, there's a battle going on. Kim and I, we traveled the other day, and on one side of the road, I kid you not, where the Republican side with their flags and their and on the other side was the Democrats, and they're both looking at each other, holding their things up, trying to get people's attention as they drive by. This nation has been polarized. Just one opposite, and everybody wants us to see their side. This is what I want you to see. The side that you need to see is this. No matter what you think, you don't even have to agree with that, but this is still right whether you like it or not. See? Thank you. Did you know many Christians aren't going to vote or don't vote? 30 to 40 million registered Christians don't vote. When asked, they have reasons. I don't like either candidate, or I don't like this candidate, or I don't like that candidate. I just don't want to make anybody mad, so I'm just not doing it. You need to, and you should, vote. Your choice as a believer in God's voice, it is our duty. We are the righteous voice on this world, this earth. It is our duty to vote. People don't like to mix politics and religion. There's politics in almost everything. But we need to understand there's a right and there is a wrong. If we understand that we are not doing this as religion, not as the world is defining, we are doing this as relationship because of what the Word of God tells us as we are in relationship with Jesus Christ. Can I say this? If we don't show people who Jesus is, they're going to hell. There is no other. There is only one way to the Father, and it's Jesus. And if we don't talk about Jesus, people won't find out. If you don't use your voice, how is faith activated? It's voice activated. People are going to go to hell. We have to deal with politics. There's ungodly, evil people passing laws that are affecting our lives and the lives of our kids and our grandkids. The enemy has an agenda. Captivity, poverty, chaos, strife, death, theft. He has a plan, and he's very cunning how he cloaks things. But somebody has to stand and speak. If you won't stand for something, you could fall for anything. So this Tuesday, unless you want to vote early, you need to let your voice be heard. Make our government accountable. We live under them. Accountable to what? How about just the Constitution? They sworn to uphold it. But there's something higher. Proverbs 14:34 says, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. What is righteousness? Righteousness is what God would call right, his right way of doing things. What is right according to God, not according to Google? Can I say this? This is not a popularity contest. You don't have to like the candidate or their personality. You're not going on vacation with them, probably not going to be sitting at the table with them. You have to look and say, who's going to do the most right in God's eyes? People have said, you mean pick the lesser of two evils? Yep. Yep. Neither of the candidates are perfect. You need to understand, on the Democratic side or the Republican, God loves them the same. And we just think that because even if they stand against him, he still loves them. Jesus still died for them. I find myself getting into hate, and I don't need that. That's not God. I mean, you can hate the devil. I think that's good. But do you know people are just operating in... We're either operating by the power of God or the power of the enemy. But I don't have to like them personally. So people say, I don't like either of them, or I don't like this one, so I'm not going to vote. Or I'll vote for the other because I hate this one. Really? If you don't vote, you just voted. You just did. Not voicing your right, you're voting. You got to look at what they stand for. What's their platform? What have they done in the past? Because the platform is more important than the person. We are endorsing things. What are they standing for? Are they standing for life? Or, well, I'm not taking away this. I'm this. People have this. What does the platform say? What does the Bible say according to what their platform says? Look at the candidate and say, which one do I think can enforce the ability and willingness to enforce righteousness? I don't want to endorse a way of life that goes contrary to the Bible. Proverbs 29:2, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked man rules, the people groan. It does make a difference who is the commander-in-chief of this country. I don't have a problem with it being a woman. Just so you know. I have people ask me in connection class. I do the first connection class. So if you're there, you want to come today. Do you have a problem with women in leadership? I don't have a problem with women in leadership. That's... what a problem of, whether woman or man, it's got to be God. It's got to be based on the Bible. If we look at the Bible and the story of Esther, basically Esther is, you know, her adopted dad, or Uncle Mordecai, so to speak. He was really her uncle, but the king at that time wasn't happy with the queen, so he began to look for another. I'm just kind of pulling all the story together. So to shorten it a little bit, she was gathered and put in the women for the king to pick, and he picked her. But he didn't know she was Jewish. So she became queen. Esther chapter 3, 1 and 2, after these things, king, and I probably won't get his name right, but I'll try it anyway. Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, and an Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were with the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman. For so the king had commanded concerning him, but Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. Now, here's the reason. The Agagites were descendants of Agag, A-G-A-G. The Amalekites were supposed to have been wiped out by Saul. Just a little backstory, but that didn't happen. Esther 3, 3 through 15, the king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you transgress the king's command?" Now, it happened when they spoke to him daily, he would not listen to them. They told it to Haman, to see whether Mordecai's words would stand, for Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay him homage, Haman was filled with wrath, but he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone because he's a coward. But anyway, that's not in there. I just threw that in there. They had told the people of Mordecai and said, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. The people of Mordecai in the first month, which is the month of Nisan. That sounds, yeah, okay. In the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast Pur, that's a lot, before Haman to determine the day and month until it fell on the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, "This is certain people scattered, dispersed among the people and all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all the other peoples. They do not keep the king's laws. Therefore, it's not fitting for the king to let them remain. If it pleases the king," this is what he does. If it pleases the king, I mean, "let a decree be written that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasures." The king took his signet ring from his hand, gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha and Agagite. Those are hard to say. The enemy of the Jews, and the king said to Haman, "The money and the people are given to you. Do with them as seems good to you." Then the king's scribes were called on the 13th day of the first month, and the decree was written according to all that Haman commanded. To the king's satraps, to the governors who were over each province, to the officials of all the people, to every province according to its script, every people in their language, in the name of King Ahasuerus, it was written and sealed with the king's signet ring, and the letters were sent by courier to the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, little children, women, in one day, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions. A copy of the document was to be issued as law in every province, being published for all people, and they should be ready for the day. The couriers went out, hastened by the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed that Shushan, the citadel, to the king, and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. Esther goes on, chapter 4, 10 through 12. Esther spoke to this guy, had a hatch, Okay. Gave him a command for Mordecai, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces. I'm going somewhere with this, so just trust me. That any man or woman who goes into the inner court of the king who has not been called will be put to death, except if the king holds out the golden scepter, and then they may live. Yet I myself must not have been called to go into the king these 30 days. So they told Mordecai Esther's words. 4:13 and 14 of Esther, Mordecai told him to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. You remain completely silent at this time. Relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the king for such a time as this?" And that's the line that we've, all of that almost we've heard, "for such a time as this." So the law had to be changed. In other words, Haman had a plot. He had an agenda. He had a reason, and he is doing his own will to manipulate everything to work to the demise of the Jews. You can see that. But the law had to be changed because it was being put into effect. So somebody had to go in and change the law. They had to invade this area and make a difference. If they didn't, people were going to die. Plain and simple. This just isn't a fairy tale. This is a true story that happened. This isn't just a fictional book that somebody just read and said, "Hey, here's a story." Someone had to change the law. The requirements are really no different than today. Ungodly laws destroy families. They kill babies through abortion. Transgender, mutilate kids. Ungodly laws, politicians who want to enforce these kind of laws. But we, as God's people, the righteous voice, must speak up. We don't use our voice, then ungodly laws will be passed, and we just let them do that by being silent. But it will affect not just my kids, but my grandkids and their kids. So Esther had a choice to preserve her family or not. We can stick our hands or our heads in the sand and kind of play ostrich or whatever we want to do, but we have to make a voice. That head in the sand thing isn't going to do anything. We can come up with all kinds of excuses. Yada, 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 yada. Please, we are obligated as God's people to make our voice known. No matter what the outcome is, you still must speak up. We are accountable for that. Will God still love me? Yes. There's nothing you can do that will change his love for you. But you have an obligation. You still have to stand before the Lord. I could speak on a dozen things besides this, but I have to stand before the Lord. These laws need to be changed. And not the way they're changing now. They're heading the wrong way. Someone has to go and confront issues at the risk of loss. Are you with me? Politics. Politics. Why did Joseph leave with Jesus to Egypt? Why did he flee in the middle of the night? Because King Herod had issued a law to kill all the babies 2 years and under. Politics. He's always involving politics, the enemy is. From the beginning in the garden, the devil tries to influence politics. Did God say? He's always trying to give you a half-truth or get you to just believe something that maybe is just slightly off. The enemy wants to be in charge. He does not like us because we were made in the image of God. Joseph was called to stand before Pharaoh. He was Hebrew, and the Egyptians hated Hebrews. He was in jail, accused of adultery. But he stood, and the whole economy was changed. The entire political platform was changed. And because of him, the nation was saved by a famine that would have wiped them out for sure. How about David? Nobody wanted to face Goliath, but David had something inside him that said, somebody's going to make this guy pay. If David hadn't done what he did, the entire nation of Israel would be taken into slavery. How about Moses? He was sent by God to confront Pharaoh, and he delivered a whole nation from the Egyptians. Can I ask you, Who's God going to send now? Who's God going to send now? Who will speak for him in this hour? It is us, the followers of Jesus Christ. Maybe he won't call you to run for office. Maybe he won't call you to do whatever like that, but he'll call you to vote. You have the privilege of using your righteous gift to vote. Get involved. I was asked if I wanted to pray for the city council meetings. I said yes. So now, whenever they put me on the schedule, I get to pray before the whole city council meeting of Marion. I'm not going to miss that opportunity. Every month, I pray at least twice for the county commissioners. They asked me to do that. I said yes. They said, would you pray more? I said yes. What would happen if we would get involved? Things just might change for the better. See, that's the lie the enemy says. You can't bring any change. There's nothing in you that would bring change. I beg to differ. I watched my son play football. And I think he probably went out for the team because he knew I loved football. I don't know. I don't think he's never really loved football. But he went out for the team. And the coaches, God bless the coaches, but I don't think they loved football. I don't even think they knew football. And he went out there, and I mean, it was just pathetic to watch. Nobody was teaching them anything. Now, I'm his dad. I'm over on the, yeah. They're not teaching them anything. And they would lose like 46-0. I mean, you might as well just say, hey, Twinkies, if you go to the end zone here, I'll give you one. Go ahead. And Zach would be like, I don't even know. And this is what it finally, I'd watched every game, and my wife can attest to this. And I would be like, oh, just almost livid. Like, these kids don't even know what they're doing. And they said, Gleespen, go in, left defensive end. He'd never played left defensive end before. And he turned around and he runs up to the coach. He goes, what left? My left? Your left? Who's left? And the coach just yelled at him, get out there. Just get out there. And he doesn't know where to go. He doesn't know what to do. And I was like, and the coach is yelling at him. I'm like, you've never taught him what to do. So I was over it. So I was going to let the coach yell at me. So I decided I would go ask the coach if he wanted to yell at me. Anyway, that conversation started out heated. And then it got, and he said, do you know football? I said, I do. He said, you want to coach? I said, if you'd let me. He said, okay, we'd love the help. Like, they had 3 games left. Do you know that team? And I'm not saying because I'm anything good. I'm just saying the kids just needed to learn some fundamentals. The last 3 games, they won 2 of them, almost won all 3. Because I just gave them something to do, showed them what to do, because then they were like, okay. I remember in one play, Zach was out there, and he was out there, and he was on the defense side, and the guy came, plowed him over, and, you know, make a long story short, he wanted to come out, and because he was like, it was scaring him, because they hadn't told him what to do, and I just had gotten down on the field. It was in that first week. I said, I want you to go back. He goes, all right, Dad, put me someplace else. I'm like, no, you got to go back there. He said, what's he going to do? I said, he's going to come at you worse than he did the last time. He goes, what? I said, listen, you just hold your ground. That's as hard as it's going to be. You get through this, that's as worse as it's going to be. He goes, what? I said, just stand there. Just don't take it. Just give it everything you got. That's as bad as it's going to get. He's like, okay. And I looked at him. We did that eye thing. He has a helmet. I remember his helmet up against my nose. Look at me. Do you trust me? Yeah. I said, he's going to come at you because, you know, he's mad. Yeah, yeah. I said, just get him out of the way. And so I gave him a couple things. You could do this, you could do that. The guy came in. Zach tried to do what he did, and it worked to some extent. Man, he was in a pile. And he got up and shook his head. I said, that's as worse as it's going to get. He goes. Somebody's got to teach. Somebody's got to get involved. Your voice can make a difference. At least those kids are like, sweet. The parents are like, are you going to coach next year? I said, no. You can make a change for the better. You can make them, you know, I made the kids, all of a sudden they got hungry to play better. They understood. They understood, well, hey, this is right. I can do this if I do it the right way. But it didn't happen until I put my hand to it. This nation won't change until we put our hand to it, till we voice what is supposed to be voiced. We get involved in the area you're supposed to be involved in. And the enemy, if you don't want to do it, he'll be glad to fill the spot. There's all kinds of things being pushed at us. Republicans are against what Democrats are for. We, you know, most Republicans are standing more with the word than the Democrats. In Ohio, a certain school system adopted a code of conduct prohibiting speech that involves discriminatory language, including misgendering and transgender students. It was taken to court, but the court upheld it. Kids have reported that their teachers told them that the students, they were told that there are 72 kinds of genders. Christian school and homeschool doesn't seem such a bad idea sometimes. God is in the way of what the world wants to do. You cannot say and vote somebody in that is okay with mutilating a child and then say you're going to stand for the Bible. I have trouble with that. That dog to me does not hunt. But the church is in the way of the world. Thank God that it is. But the world's trying to gain speed. Currently, 5% of people under 30 believe they were born in the wrong body. 50% of people between 18 and 29 believe it's possible to be born in the wrong body. Who taught them that? Teachers and college professors. Hitler played this game. He tried to get the mind of children. In Germany, every non-Jewish boy in Germany was required to be part of the Hitler Youth Movement, and they took kids away from their parents because you know why? Parents are the greatest influence. Public schools are doing some of that, in some cases more subtly. Now, before I go on, I'm not saying all of public school system is bad, and thank God we have believing teachers that are there that are standing and doing their part in what they can do. Thank God for Karen Clayton, who's in the back there, and other teachers of the like, that's where they're employed, and they are standing to do their best they can stand for righteousness. Thank God for that. Give them a hand. Would you do that? But the devil's already redefined marriage. It's not what God said, one man and one woman. Now the enemy's trying to redefine if you are a man or a woman. And if you don't like what you are, you can be the other. Then if you want, you can compete in sports. There's teaching stuff in kindergarten, gender ideologies, usually through storybooks. Kids, they're fighting that kids can get sex changes if they're supposed to be not what they think they are, and they can keep it from their parents. The Democratic Party from this promotes available funding for those things that you and I have to pay for. And they've been pushing stuff like this. Our kids, folks, are at risk. 22:6 of Proverbs says, train up a child in the way he would go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. So who's training them? Luke 6:40, a disciple is not above the teacher, but everyone who is perfectly trained will be like his teacher. It's important to know who's teaching. That's one of the reasons, you know, we as ministers, we were traveling, so Kim became their teacher because we would be in some place and God would move us someplace else. But if I was doing something, you know, I what I do like about, if you have strong kids, And you know that school system won't change them. They'll change that school system. Man, let them go in there and infect the kids. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying somebody's got to go and be the voice. Somebody's got to be the one crying out in the wilderness, this is not the way. Stats say most kids are most impressionable between 3 and 7 years old. Genesis 18, 19, I've known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, and the Lord may bring Abraham what he has spoken to him. Now remember, Jesus had to come through Abraham's lineage 42 generations later after Abraham. That's a long time. Remember, the Israelites weren't allowed to intermarry because they had to protect the lineage, and so that teaching had to be passed down. And if that had been broken, Jesus couldn't have legally come. You need to understand how all of that works. The Bible never lies. Hezekiah was the best king Judah ever had, but his son Manasseh was the worst and the most wicked. You would think in one generation it would not fall or make a difference, but it does. Look what's happening now in just a term of an election or two. We need to vote. Matthew 2:16, Herod, when he saw that he was deceived by the wise men, was exceedingly angry, and he sent forth, put to death all the male children who were in Bethlehem and all its districts from 2 years old and under, according to the time which Pharaoh had determined from the wise men. So Pharaoh figured out Jesus is between, he's two or less. Let's just kill them all. And he's mad because he got duped. The wise men, God protected. See, Satan tried to stop Jesus from coming. And he's tried to stop the godly seed. My friends, if we know this book, he's coming again. And we're going to be ready. But there's godly people out there fighting the battle. Like I said, the Karen Claytons and the people that are in stuff every day that have to keep their faith strong. The enemy's still about it. He still wants to kill babies. It's called abortion. If he can't kill them, he'll twist the truth with perversion about their gender. But as a church, we're called to love people. Everybody. When it comes to laws that affect millions of people, we must vote. I was getting Kim's oil changed or brakes on my car fixed not long ago, and some guy started talking to me about the candidates, and he was talking to me about the one candidate on the Democratic side. And see, I'm being very kind, just so you know. All I said, and this is what I mean, I don't hate any of the candidates. I just said, I'm not a fan. That's almost saying, like, I don't hate the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm just not a fan. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't like what they stand for. I hate what gets involved in that, and I hate the enemy. I think I'm fair to say that. But I said, you know, I'm not a fan. And the guy behind the counter said, well, I am, in a mad, loud voice. And I said, well, okay, it's America. And the other guy that was telling me, he goes, that's right, it's America. You can do it however you want. And that's true. In America, we have the choice. But we must vote because we are the voice of righteousness on this earth. Will we make a difference? If all Christians voted, we would. We would change the direction of this country. Think about that. If the 30 million that aren't going to vote voted? Wow. You want to miss all the, as my wife would call, the Mahoodie on voting day? Just vote early. Go wherever you can go tomorrow instead of Tuesday. But please, please vote. How many know George Barna? George Barna is the king of stats and surveys and stuff. So 51% of evangelical Christians aren't planning to vote. 51%. If the Democrat side wins, it's because the church handed it to them. We need to vote. People are rising up to make a difference. College students, working class, moms, people now are saying, wait, this is just wrong. We need to, maybe we need to voice our opinion. We need to let people know Jesus is alive and well. The missing ingredient, and we've taken it for granted, is that the church cares about this nation. We should be caring about this world, these people. And if they voted the way you didn't like it, I can't change that. I can't do anything about it, and neither can you. But what I can do, I can love them for Jesus Christ. But the church needs to take a stand. This poll is, I mean, it's George Barna. It's not a fly-by-night, like, hey, Jimmy Scott over here, he's doing a poll. It's not somebody, this is like the guy, that's what he does. He says we're on a pace for a 13% decrease of the Christian turnout. And he's polled thousands of pastors to which the vast majority won't even talk about it to their congregation. This is a five-alarm fire, people. Here's a couple of reasons. Pastors or believers say, I'm a Christian, and the Republican candidate is a sinner, and I can't vote for a sinner. Does your mirror not work, or? I mean, according to the Bible, we're all sinners and we fall short of the glory of God. We need Jesus as Lord and Savior. How about this? Well, the Republican candidate, he's not pro-life the way I think he should be. I'm not asking you to agree with all of his decision. I don't agree with all of it. But I'm saying the lesser of two evils. Pass the rhetoric. Talk is cheap. Here's the fact. 10 states have abolished abortion. Did you know that? And that was only possible thanks to the candidate that used to fill the office. You can say, well, I liked this president from before and this one. And they were Christians. I'm not saying they weren't good people, but they didn't do anything about this. Nothing. It was the former president that brought about the people that gave us the most victories in this area. In history, when asked, he defends the reversal of Roe and Wade. That's good. We want it reversed. I mean, we want that gone, right? 10 have abolished abortion. Well, he's wealthy. Nothing wrong with being wealthy. He might not go to church. People are the church. This is a building. I get it. He's led a colorful life, not condoning it. But he's not afraid to fight. And he believes in what the Word is saying. He put things in place that as soon as he was out of office were taken back. Did you know silence is consent? If we remain silent, we are consenting to whatever the turnout is. If you stay silent because you won't vote, you just voted. Did you know that the Democratic Party, these are facts, so this isn't, they have abortion clinics right outside their national convention? Did you know that? People can go get a full-term abortion right there. Baby's 9 months old, and they'll tear it apart right there. Do you remember when the people that are in charge turned Easter into a transgender day of awareness? Help me, Jesus. We had other presidents that, I'm not saying they weren't good men, but they did nothing about some of these things. But we don't want to, we won't vote for the Republican candidate because he won't quote Bible verses. But yet he's winning victories according to Bible standards. Let me just say this. If we are doing that because of, I just don't like him, We are too high on our horse. We are too high on our religious. I mean, if he didn't do that, I get it. I wouldn't vote for him. But I'm just saying, here's what's happened. We need to look in the mirror. No, he's not a saint, but neither are you and neither am I. I'm not condoning his past life or all of that. I'm not. And I know it sounds like I'm just saying, vote Bible. What if God is using him to bring about good and a change in this nation? God has done things like that before. 31 million evangelicals are planning to stay home and sit this one out. We cannot let that happen. America needs the church. Pastors need to stand up. You know, because this is what we do, because we are so friendly, seeker friendly, that we pick our church by who has the best coffee, do they serve donuts, is the pastor cool, does he have a cool pair of jeans, does he wear skinny jeans? I'm not wearing skinny jeans because I'm not skinny. I mean, I like being casual. I don't mind wearing tennis shoes or all that, but if church is we're picking it like we pick our lunch restaurant, we need to look at what we're doing. Because, yes, we need each other. Yes, we need to fellowship. Yes, we can build one another up. But let me just tell you, church is about getting the Word of God so that we can go out into the mission field. It's about getting corrected. It's about getting more things in us. It's about filling up with God. It's not just about coming and going, hey, I've been to church because we have a great golf club. Well, happy day. Can I play through? Let's just get past some of the stuff just to bring people in and get down to brass tacks. Church is about Jesus Christ. It's a place where you can go to be saved, delivered, and healed. It's not just the place where now we're told, well, anything goes. No, it doesn't. People, oh, there's, yeah, any way you go. We all, I had some guy tell me, it doesn't matter who you worship as long as you worship, right? Really? That's like saying all roads lead to the same place. No, they don't. We're going to have a harvest party at Lawrence Orchards. You go one road, I'll go another. They don't all go to Lawrence Orchards. There's a certain way you got to go or you're not getting there. And I'll eat your hot dog, so there. We have to face the giants. Who's coming with me? Let's face them together. Let's face them with God inside us, God on our side. Let's be like David, and it doesn't matter the size. Today is the day you're coming down. Would you stand your feet? Let's pray.